Coming at you from Syracuse, New York, it's The Real Deal Podcast with your hosts, Ian Phillips and Cassie Lee Grimaldi.
Hello, everybody. Welcome back to The Real Deal Podcast. My name is Ian Phillips. I write about movies, I talk about movies, I watch movies, just basically everything movies. I'm here, as always, with my co-host, Cassie Grimaldi.
Hi, I'm Cassie, and I write about movies and TV, and I watch a lot of TV, and yeah, that's what I do, too.
And as always, we are going to use our combined brain power to talk about movies and TV, past and present, all of that. And let's just dive right into it. The biggest news story of the week was that the official cast was announced for Star Wars this week.
Star Wars Episode 7.
Which doesn't have an actual name yet, just Star Wars Episode 7.
Yeah.
I don't know what it'll be called, probably not The Phantom Menace, but...
Probably not.
Anyway, casting news, I find it interesting because casting news usually, only applies to people who are, very into this, stuff, follow film obsessively, but, I've talked to a lot of people, just casual film watchers, who are, really excited about this. It's a big deal. It's Star Wars.
Yeah, it's a pretty big deal. I think... I guess they sort of announced there's a bunch of newcomers
and old people.
I gotta say
they are old now, but it's really cool the idea that we will see Luke Skywalker and Han Solo and Princess Leia
as actual senior citizens
and the actual Chewbacca and the original C-3PO and R2-D2. But some of the newcomers include Adam Driver, which was a rumor, but he will be in it. Oscar Isaac, Max von Sydow, and Andy Serkis. Andy Serkis, who played Gollum, Caesar in the new Planet of the Apes movie. He was also King Kong. So, he will probably play... I wish I could imagine that he would play Yoda.
He was also the gay boss in 13 Going on 30, don't forget.
Of course. And he was in The Prestige. But anyway, yeah. what do you make of some of these people that are going to be in it? It seems Adam Driver and Oscar Isaac seem like interesting choices.
Yeah, it does seem really interesting, huh? But I mean, they're both very diverse and they both have range, so...
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I think it's, it seems... I feel like performances really can't be predicted until you see how everything meshes together.
Yes.
And it seems like a really, really young cast. Mm-hmm. Oscar Isaac isn't super young, but Adam Driver.
He's kind of young. Yeah, Adam Driver's really young. And also not to mention that they both have range, but they both haven't really done roles outside of smaller project. Either of them never headlined a blockbuster before. And I'm honestly really surprised that there wasn't more people outraged about the fact, but maybe what helps is that they're not, both of them, I guess, are going to be playing new characters. It's not like they got cast as, Luke Skywalker or Han Solo.
Exactly.
I think that would have caused, a fanboy outrage.
Yeah, I agree.
But they're both incredibly talented. They were both in Inside Llewyn Davis, which is my favorite. This is my favorite movie of 2013, as Cassie and I have talked about before. We really hope that they'll sing Please, Mr. Kennedy again.
In space!
Outer space. But I think also this might be Oscar Isaac's revenge for the fact that he wasn't nominated for an Oscar this year, very wrongly.
Yeah, you think so? Do you think this will be a summer movie or Thanksgiving?
It's coming out in December, they decide. Because next summer I think the new Star Trek is coming out next summer, so J.J. Abrams has a giant year next year. I don't know how.
J.J. Abrams has a giant year every year. I don't know
That's
how.
That's true.
There's have to be 13 of him.
Yes, I think he has the cloning machine from The Prestige, and there's of him running around directing Star Wars and Star Trek and maybe Super 8 sequel, Super 9. Probably.
The Kodak Super 9. Coming to a drugstore near you.
Yes. So anyway, I'm a Star Wars fan. I'm not an obsessive, but I'm a huge fan of Oscar Isaac and Adam Driver, as well as a lot of the other actors in it, and I'm very excited to see what J.J. Abrams will do with it. I think it'll be really cool.
Yeah, I think it's in capable hands.
I agree. Another bit of news this week, some sad news. Character actor Bob Hoskins died earlier this week. He'd been fighting Parkinson's for a long time, but that wasn't, I don't think that was the cause of death.
He passed away from pneumonia, actually.
But he was one of those actors, I remember recently James Rebhorn also passed away, and he was one of those actors where you kind of looked and you realized that he's in so much more than you realized.
Yeah, most people know Bob Hoskins from, as a detective, like the only human in Who Framed Roger Rabbit.
Which I love.
It's a great movie.
That's one of my favorites from my childhood. I think we all remember it really well.
Yeah. He's just like this sort of like gruff, gritty British guy. Mm-hmm. He's a fun fact. He's played Smee from the Peter Pan, like, I guess, universe, like, in two different adaptations. So that's pretty cool.
That is pretty awesome. He was also through his filmography, so I was kind of forgetting a lot of things he was in. I mean, he was in Spice World. He was in the Pink Floyd's The Wall movie. He was in Michael, which I don't know if anyone knows that movie where John Travolta plays an angel.
Yeah.
It's like, it was a weird, like, classic in my family, I guess, that not a lot of people...
Me too.
...would watch. He was also in Super Mario Bros., as my producer Nick is reminding me right now, which I don't really remember that well, but I just remember it being kind of terrible.
It's so funny.
It's very funny, yes. I should probably rewatch that. I'm feeling a need to now. I've also never seen Hook, actually, which is...
Oh, it's so good.
It's one of those classics that just completely skipped me.
It's so good.
He was also nominated for an Oscar in 1986 for Mona Lisa, which I've never seen. But basically... He was one of those people that, like, who did so much and you kind of never really realized it.
Yeah.
But he was sort of, like, I guess you could say he was kind of one of those that guys, but he was really good at being that guy.
Yeah. So, rest in peace, Bob Hoskins.
We'll miss you, and we will watch Who Framed Roger Rabbit in your honor.
Yeah.
I would have done it anyway, but...
I just saw something else.
What did you see?
He's in Mermaids, which is one of my favorite movies from the 90s.
Really? What's Mermaids?
With Cher and Winona Ryder and Christina Ricci.
Okay, I feel like I should probably see this.
It's so good. It's so good.
Okay, that's one to watch in his honor. Okay, we're going to move on now to Analog This, where we talk about TV. So the biggest thing this week was John Oliver's new show premiered on HBO. It's called Last Week Tonight with John Oliver. It's his own talk show, and it's only once a week on Sunday nights where he recaps the whole week. So, like, Bill Maher has the same thing, but on Friday nights. But the difference is that John Oliver is a lot funnier. But but that's besides the point. But anyway, he had to host The Daily Show this summer. Because Jon Stewart was gone, and he was amazing.
He was so good.
Did you really, like, keep up with him the whole summer?
I watched The Daily Show every day, full disclosure. But... John Oliver as The Daily Show host was so good.
He, like, was a breath of fresh air to the show, even though he's very similar to Jon Stewart.
Yeah.
I was just rewatching yesterday some of, like, the old clips of him talking about Carlos Danger.
Oh, my God.
It's so funny. Like, he just tears him a new one every time. Like, you can just feel his anger is, like, so palpable. Like, the madder he gets, like, the funnier it is.
Oh, I just love John Oliver.
But anyway, what did you think of Last Week Tonight?
I thought it was really great. It sort of followed, like, the Daily Show format pretty closely, but what I really liked about it is that he just jumped right in. He wasn't this is my show. Get used to it, or
like
something
too.
Dumb.
There was no monologue or anything, no intro.
Yeah, so I thought that was really great, because... whatever, like, why does he's John Oliver. Like,
no, it felt like he definitely, like, it wasn't, like, a big deal for him that he had his own show. Like, it felt like it felt like it was inevitable.
I feel like if you're watching Last Week Tonight with John Oliver, you're not watching it because you're like, let me check out this newcomer.
No, exactly, because we all know who he is. Maybe one thing about it is that it was very Daily Show-esque, which isn't a bad thing, because I love The Daily Show, and never mind having more of it, but I would like to see if the show kind of takes its own direction. But I could see a lot of that, because it was just interesting, because John Oliver, like, on The Daily Show, they have Jon Stewart as the host, and then they have correspondents, and John Oliver's playing both correspondent and host.
Yeah, so...
And I also thought it was just the first time you got to hear him say fuck on the air was just... I was like, wow. Because, like, I felt like he seemed really excited to say it.
Like,
I'm not used to it. It's like
that episode of South Park.
And it was like, there's a lot of people who are like, oh, now he could have taken Colbert's spot. But I'm excited that he got to be on HBO.
Yeah.
I think that's really cool.
Me too.
But on the sub, and also on that subject, it's just funny because another big piece, there's been a lot of late night shakeups in the past few weeks. And I don't know, do you enjoy the whole, like, the late night wars and following that? I always find it really interesting.
It's really interesting, but I don't like the fact that people call them late night wars.
Late night wars.
Like,
so what would be a better word for it than your...
I don't know what would be a better... I feel like it's turned into a war, the way that people cover it, and, like...
Just, yeah, it's the news media calling it. I feel like ever since... I think it's been called, like, the late night wars probably ever since, like, the Letterman-Leno thing from the 90s, and then, like, it came back again when Leno and took over the Tonight Show from Conan again.
Yeah, but that was, like, 10 years apart.
Yeah.
So it's kind of weird that it's all happening right now.
Yes.
Like,
but it seems less, like, it seems a lot more, there's nothing that hostile now. There's just a lot of interesting shakeups. But anyway, this week, Craig Ferguson, who's the host of The Late Late Show, which premieres, which is on after Letterman 5 nights a week, is stepping down, and there was no immediate plans for anything that would happen afterwards.
Yeah.
But it seemed like, I don't know, Craig Ferguson, I've only seen a show. Have you ever watched The Late Late Show before?
I've maybe seen clips of it. I've never watched it.
I've only seen it like a few times, but Craig Ferguson is a really funny guy, and the show is an interesting format because
he doesn't
do like a monologue at the beginning. It starts off with him just, like, it'll just be like him coming right up to the camera and talking to him, going on like a long rant. Sometimes he'll have puppets on. It's kind of like what the Pete Holmes show is doing right now, like not just telling typical monologue jokes, and I really appreciate that. But he's a funny guy, and I feel it is weird. It kind of feels like he's been forgotten about a little bit just because the late night field is so crowded.
Exactly. But I really like his stand-up, so maybe he'll do more of that. Or
and I don't,
I don't know why he's stepping down, do you?
No, I have no idea. Like, maybe he could have been, maybe he was, like, maybe, like, he thought he could have been predecessor to Letterman, and then he got completely passed over.
Yeah.
Maybe he was just done with the show. I don't know who would replace him, though. I kind of hope it would be Joel McHale, because I think it would be cool if he had a late-night show.
The Soup isn't enough for you? I hate watching The Soup, because you can see how miserable Joel McHale is.
I mean, he wanted to host that show, though.
I know.
But I don't know. I think he would be...
Sometimes he loves it, and sometimes he hates it.
I think he would be a really good... Do you think he would be a good... Like, he's such a good actor, I think. Like, and I love what he's done in Community, but I think he'd be a really good late-night host for, like, a show like that.
He could be.
You heard it here. Joel McHale is getting the Real Deal seal of approval right now.
Oh, my God.
The Real Deal seal of approval. I hope you're all okay with
that. So, anyway...
But anyway... okay, that's about all we have for TV this week. We all really enjoyed John Oliver, and you should definitely watch it. I can't wait to see what he's going to do
tomorrow
night. What he's going to do tomorrow?
Well,
tomorrow night. You're right.
Well, today's Saturday while we're recording this.
Yes, so that means tomorrow night. But by the time you hear this, it will already have happened, but can't predict the future.
Yeah.
But anyway, it's also just want to say one more thing. It's kind of interesting that he's doing like once a week talk show when like everything, like all talk shows are usually every night, and like Twitter, like the news is constantly updating. It's kind of cool that he's just doing like a whole week recap.
Yeah.
All right, well, we're going to take a quick break now, and we're going to come back with a very special Real Talk segment. So stay tuned.
Very special. So special.
So special. Welcome back to the Real Deal Podcast, everybody. This is Real Talk, and we're going to do a new thing this week, and we call it Classics Exchange.
Yeah, because there's no good movies out this week, and we didn't want to watch any of them.
Especially not Transcendence.
Yeah, science.
But anyway, so what we're doing this week is I told Cassie about a favorite movie of mine that she hasn't seen, and she told me about a favorite movie of hers. We both went our separate ways and watched them, and now we're going to discuss whether or not those movies live up to the hype. I'm going to start the one that Cassie gave me. She gave me The Apartment from the year 1960. Before I talk about it, can you tell me why you like The Apartment so much, why you thought I should watch it?
I like The Apartment so much because when I was like 15, I decided to watch it after I watched, I think I was watching Breakfast at Tiffany's the same day, and I was like, oh, this is a really good movie. But for some reason, Breakfast at Tiffany's didn't really live up to the hype for me, so I decided to watch something else on Netflix, which was The Apartment. And when I saw it, I was like, wow, I can't believe they made movies like this in 1960. Like, it's a story that I can relate to and, like, I really loved. And it seemed like something that would, like, that it seemed, I don't know, I was, like, maybe fresh off of Garden State and, like, depressing love stories. So it was... It's really great.
I'm just coming to think that, like, of most kids in our generation, when they were 15 years old, Garden State was like the movie that shaped what they thought about movies for a really long time. Yeah. I think we're all just starting to recover from that now, even though Zach Braff's trying to come back again and ruin our perception of movies. But I like Zach Braff. I was kidding. I like Zach Braff.
Zach Braff's okay, but yeah.
But The Apartment, I'm very happy you chose it for me because I really liked it and thought it lived up to the hype. This is a Billy Wilder movie Billy Wilder is one of probably the best writer and directors, I think, ever.
Yeah, Some Like It
in
Hot.
In Hollywood, Some Like It Hot, Sunset Boulevard.
Weird.
Stalag 17, like, he just made so many, these were, most of them are, original stories as well. He's won so many Oscars. The Apartment actually won for Best Picture in 1960, and I feel like it's a Best Picture winner that's unfortunately overlooked, and, I know it came out in the same year as Psycho, which wasn't even nominated for Best Picture that year, and, I think I held some resentments against it, but, The Apartment, I'm really happy it won Best Picture because it's not the kind of movie that normally would win Best Picture. So, basically, the story, it stars Jack Lemmon. He plays a man named C.C. Baxter, who works in insurance in New York City. It takes place, during the same time that the movie came out.
It's Mad Men.
Yeah, it's basically the Mad Men era, but anyway, he rents out his apartment to men who want to have affairs, and he uses that kind of as leverage to move up in his company, and then but he's also, the nice guy. He's very lonely, and he ends up meeting the elevator operator in his building, who's played by Shirley MacLaine, and they form a little on-and-off love interest, but she is also having an affair with the...
We're spoiling.
Okay, I should probably have said this earlier, but there's going to be some spoilers. I know these movies are old, but from now on, spoiler alert for The Apartment in Chinatown.
Yeah.
Okay.
So
she's having an affair with his boss, which is really, it's really brilliantly...
Not just his boss, the CEO of the company.
Yeah, the CEO of the company, and they keep using that as, leverage against each other. I thought it was the screenplay. I think this is one of my favorite screenplays I can think of.
It's so good.
Just the way it reveals the little twist. I love listening to the dialogue because this is a Hays Code movie.
Yeah, exactly. And so there's lots of little innuendos and it's just great. When Baxter gets called into his boss's office one day, he thinks he's getting in trouble for letting his coworkers use his apartment, and the boss never comes out and says it, but no one ever says they're having affairs.
No,
there.
But you just know it.
You just know it, and the way the boss comes out and says that he needs to use the apartment. Sorry, what just happened? use the apartment was it's just so clever.
And
it's just so good.
Yeah, I tried to record some of the innuendos, and I don't know what this means, but I could not stop laughing at it. And it's, boy, I'd like to get her on a slow elevator to China. That was just... I just want to say, though, that, it's, we live in a way better Hollywood now where, there's not many restrictions on creative expression, but I also do think just watching The Apartment reminded me that restrictions really do actually breed...
Enhance
and breed creativity.
Shirley MacLaine was in an interview with I forget who in, the 1970s, and she said how in a lot of the movies... during the Hays Code. I mean, it was self-inflicted, I guess you could say.
Yeah, it was kind of, yeah.
Yeah, but...
there was no MPAA.
Yeah. So she was saying how women during movies in the Hays Code got to be lawyers and judges and everything because they couldn't be in the bedroom. They couldn't, be seen having sex. And ever since the Hays Code stopped, the women can't really get out of the bedroom anymore. So.
That's very interesting.
I thought that was
interesting. She's a great female character in this as well.
Yeah,
even though
awesome.
Today her job would not exist.
Yeah.
She would not be an elevator operator because people can now just press buttons on their own.
Yeah, a novel idea.
But that is really, yes, it is a very novel idea. We've certainly, there's a lot of, I like watching movies that are very of its time like this to see, they're typewriters, the elevator operators, all the things that you do, especially because it's very much this is an office comedy, I guess you could call it. Kind of takes place only in two locations, really.
The office and the apartment.
The office and the apartment, hence it's called The Apartment.
Yeah, so actually the bulk of it takes place in the apartment after, the CEO is married, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, and Fran, I guess, is in love with him, and so she can't take it anymore and tries to kill herself in Baxter's apartment.
Let me just note, this is a comedy, but it's a very dark
one. It's really dark. And so she's, like, recovering there all day, and that's how sort of, like, the relationship between Baxter and Fran sort of blooms.
They have great chemistry, and
his neighbor is this Jewish doctor, Dr. Dreyfus.
I love that. Let me say also, I love all of the characters in it. There's a lot of Jewish characters, a lot of Yiddish getting dropped, even though, like, there's like, no mention, really, of it. They say chutzpah a lot, and mishigas.
Mensch.
And mensch. Oh, yes. They say, he said, I just want to be a mensch, a real human, which... It's not the direct definition of mensch, but I know what they mean.
Yeah. I mean, I think they meant more like be a decent human being.
Yes, exactly.
Like, real humans shouldn't act like this, because Dr. Dreyfus the whole time thinks that Baxter is the one with all these women
in
and
really
out of the apartment.
Yeah. Classic misunderstanding.
Whoa, classic mix-up.
But also we talked about kind of before, this takes place. This is very much a movie set in the Mad Men era, but was made... During that era, it's about powerful men who are always cheating on their wives and then taking the 710 train home to White Plains. That's basically what it is. But, like, I feel like when you think of movies made in this time in the 50s and the early 60s, like, everything's kind of whitewashed. They, like, They paint this, like, post-war America where, like, everyone's happy now. Consumerism has taken over. There's, like... But then, like, this one really pulls behind the curtain, and, like, it really says how it is.
Yeah.
And, like, you'd think you'd have to wait years and years to do that, and that's, like, something I really can't believe this, like, won this picture, and it was, like, a popular at the box office.
It's just so good.
It is so good, and it has, I think, one of my favorite closing lines of all time. So, there's a part very early on after Fran has tried to kill herself where Baxter is trying to cheer her up by playing cards with her, and she's, like, really not feeling it. She doesn't want to do it at all. And then at the very end, it ends with them trying to play cards again, and he's dealing out cards, and he's, like, Baxter, he's a very nice guy, he's very upfront, and he's saying, like, you know, like, Fran, I love you, and then she just smiles and says, shut up and deal.
And it's a great way.
It's a great way to end. I think this movie's very inspirational for, like, a lot of modern romantic comedies, more so than most people realize.
Yeah, it's so good. It's
I think
so
it's a precursor
good.
To Harry Met Sally and everything. Yes, as you can tell, Cassie really loves The Apartment.
Yeah.
And now I'm on board. Okay. I think we've said our piece about The Apartment. Now we're going to move on. Cassie, what did you watch?
So I watched Chinatown because, unlike most sane people, I've never seen Chinatown. And so I feel like going through it, I feel like I'm going to give, like, an elementary film study class right now.
But it kind of, it's a very much the kind of movie that's studied in film study classes for the right reasons.
For the right reasons,
but
yeah.
But it's one of my favorites of all. I think it's been in my top 10 favorites since I first saw it. I saw it when I was 12 years old for the first time.
Mm-hmm.
And it was kind of like...
12?
Yes, I watched a lot of movies when I was... That were maybe not appropriate really young, but anyway,
yeah,
like...
Yeah, I mean, I don't know how I would have understood this.
I don't know,
I,
like,
12.
I did... You know, like, a lot of these movies, like... Yeah, a lot of these movies like that sometimes
Ian's
would go...
Special boy.
Yes, I guess special is at least, but, anyway, this, like, movies like this would normally go over my head, but I remember watching this, and I was so engaged, and I, like, watched it with wide eyes, like... I had, like, I thought the movie had such a sense of humor, like, the mystery was just so ever enrapturing.
The mystery is so sophisticated, and so it's kind of strange how closely I was able to pay attention
mm-hmm.
to it, and, like, how much it didn't matter and how much it mattered at the same time.
Yes, it's really surprising, but I remember you talked about before with The Apartment how, like, you saw it when you were young and, like, you kind of couldn't, like, believe, like, you were watching it, like, based on what the movie was about, and I felt... That same way, I was like, oh my god, what did I just watch? This is Roman Polanski directed Chinatown, so it is not a pretty movie.
Mm-mm. Isn't he in it too?
He's in it. He plays the guy who cuts Jake's nose. You know what happens to nosy fellas who stick their nose where it doesn't belong.
Yeah.
It's a great scene. So what did you think of Chinatown?
Oh, I really, really liked it. Should I, like, describe what happens in Chinatown?
You can give a little brief plot synopsis
for us. Chinatown is about this PI named J.J. Gittes. And
I like how Faye Dunaway always says it, Mr. Gittes.
Yeah, and so he's like a PI, and this woman comes into his office, and she's like, I think my husband is cheating on me. And he's just like, ugh. Because that's apparently all he ever gets to do is investigate infidelity.
This takes place in L.A., so there's a lot of affairs.
Yeah, I guess so. What was I saying?
Yeah. So
this woman comes in, and he starts following this guy around, Mr. What's his last name again?
Mr. Hollis
Mulray. I just watched this, like, this morning.
Yeah.
So
it's okay. There's a lot of weird names in it.
So he follows Hollis, who looks a lot like Jeff Goldblum. he keeps, like, visiting all the reservoirs. He's the chief engineer of the water, mm-hmm. the company that, like, owns all the water in Los Angeles, I guess. And so, long story short, he takes a picture of him with this young woman, and that picture gets published in the newspaper next day, exposing him as, like, a corrupt politician-type figure.
There's a lot of corruption.
There's a lot of corruption in general in L.A. in the 1930s, yes. I guess. But, then his real wife comes in.
Yes, who's played by Faye Dunaway.
Yeah, this woman who first came in was a fake wife. So the real wife, Faye.
Always weird. That part
Evelyn.
Was always very weird to me.
Yeah, I was like, whoa. But yeah, so Evelyn, who's played by Faye Dunaway, comes in and she says she's going to sue him because she was, like, some woman impersonated her, and now, like, her life is all in shambles because of this media blitz about her husband. So then he tries to go talk to the wife and say, like, look, I was set up. I want to figure this out, and blah, blah.
And it turns into a whole...
It turns into this whole thing.
It basically connects with... the whole thing is about the battle for, like, over, like, the lack of water in
L.A.
Yeah,
the lack of water.
They want to move. It's like, it is still very... I've seen this movie enough times, it still confuses me, but basically they want to move the water somewhere else.
Yeah.
And that's what all the corruption is over. The chief bad guy in it, his name is Noah Cross, who's played by John Huston, which is really cool. He's in it because he directed The Maltese Falcon, which is, like, this movie gets a lot of its inspiration from, and he's frightening just because, I don't know, he, like, is a character who's always really calm, but he's an evil monster.
So, Hollis gets murdered, he's drowned in the reservoir, and so then... Gittes has to figure that one out, too. And so the whole movie is just figuring out how everyone's being double-crossed. And it's really all about how...
Double-cross.
Yeah, I don't know. Double Dutch, whatever. it's really all about how this resource that really everybody needs, water, is sort of being squandered. And it's about sort of...
Something for life. Everyone's killing each other over something they need for life.
Exactly.
And it's interesting because it takes place in L.A. in, like, in the 30s, so that's, like, when it was starting to become a boom town, and, like, they're saying it's, like, a desert town, but it's on the ocean. They don't know what to do with the water there.
Yeah.
But,
So, yeah, long story short, there's some incest.
Yes, there's a lot. I think, like, it's hard not to talk about Chinatown, not focus on the ending, because it has probably one of the most memorable endings in film history, I think.
Yeah, it definitely does.
It gets you. What did you think of? We can kind of say in short.
The ending sort of, the whole movie is very long, and you get this very long, drawn out, like, what interesting story about the water and like who's
nothing is ever what it seems.
Yeah, exactly. And so then at the end, it's just sort of like this big explosion of, like, revelation.
Everything comes together.
It feels like Jake is getting set up, and his partner, well, his old partner, I guess, from Chinatown.
It's called Chinatown. It doesn't have a scene in Chinatown until the very end, but Chinatown's, like, a state of mind, because it's a place where. I think I read about the reason that they want to use Chinatown is because back then Chinatown was a place there was, like, so many different ethnic groups, and it was very chaotic and impossible to be a cop in Chinatown because it really couldn't be controlled. And, like, this whole movie is kind of about there's certain things that are, like, just beyond our control, which
exactly.
The dark theme of the movie.
Yeah.
It actually had, like, a happier ending originally.
Yeah.
And
really?
It had, like, a happier ending, and then it was written by... It was written by Robert Towne.
Yeah.
And it originally had, like, I mean, I don't know about a happy ending, but it had an ending that had, like, a real resolution to it. And then Polanski, like, this was this was after like the Sharon Tate murders, and it was a very dark. He was always, obviously, his movies are all very dark, but he wanted to make the ending a lot more cynical.
Yeah.
Which is what it is. It's very, like, it scarred me a little bit as a kid to watch it. Because it's very, but it was, like, also, like, amazing. I couldn't
I'm
get
sure.
it.
Sure.
Yeah. I couldn't get it out of my, I couldn't yeah. get it out of my mind.
And that's exactly what you want. So, basically, you find out that this woman who they started trying to investigate, Catherine, who you find out that, well, at first, Evelyn says she's her sister, and then she says her daughter.
There's like a there's another famous scene where Jack Nicholson is slapping her around, saying, she's my sister, she's my daughter.
Yeah. It's been like parodied a bunch of times.
It has been. I think they did it. I remember them doing it on The Daily Show once when I was a lot younger, and it has been all over the place because it's a very famous scene.
You find out that she's actually both. And
because she was raped by her father, who is Noah. Her father is Noah Cross.
Yeah.
And then at the end, she kind of wants to take her child back. So basically, like, all these political issues intertwine with personal issues. And, like, the more Jake tries to stop it,
the worse it gets.
Like, I've heard some other, like, I've read a lot about the ending because I was really interested in it. And there was this whole thing about how, like, you remember, so she tries to get away in a car, and, like, a cop starts shooting at her, and Jake, like, tries to, like, punch him, like, tries to hit him away, and then he ends up shooting her anyway.
Yeah, and
then
she dies.
Noah takes, she gets a bullet in the head. Noah takes her daughter back, and everyone says, forget it, Jake, it's Chinatown, and they just walk off and forget about this whole thing. And there's, like, a theory that, like, if Jake hadn't tried to stop him, that, like, the bullet might have missed anyway, so, like, by helping, he was actually making it worse.
Yeah. Which is, like, a theme, I guess, or something.
Yes, it's a theme, I guess, or something. You know, it's something also that people don't really talk about. I actually think a lot of this movie is way funnier than people give it credit for.
You think so?
I think it's just Jack Nicholson. Like,
it's
kind of like wry.
These
dry. Yes, exactly.
Not dry, rye, with a W.
Yes, it's very rye. Yes, rye. I thought you said dry. But
not like the bread.
But anyway, it's just Jack Nicholson. Like, there's a whole scene where he tells this really racist joke.
Oh, yeah.
And then, like, Faye Dunaway is behind him the whole time, and he has no idea. And then there's another scene where he's trying to, like, steal something from public records, and he uses the
ruler
to rip it. Yeah, he coughs really loudly. And, like, it just, the way Jack Nicholson plays it is what makes it funny. Like, he was of his time, I think, like, along with, like, De Niro and, like, Al Pacino in the 70s, there were some amazing actors.
Man, there's really no actors like that. I feel like everybody...
Daniel Day-Lewis is pretty good.
I mean,
Christian Bale's pretty good.
I guess. Well, I think that the amount of movies that come out that are so, like, action-packed and gunshots, like The Dark Knight and Batman, The Dark Knight Rises, and all that, I think sort of take away from the real power of performance that people like Jack Nicholson and Robert De Niro had. I think movies are too flashy nowadays.
That's absolutely
I watched all these old movies this week. But
I liked watching these old movies this week. This is from the came out in 1974, and the 70s were like Hollywood's. They were like maybe the last golden age that Hollywood had. If you're interested in it, you should read a book called Easy Riders, Raging Bulls. That's all about basically how after with the Hays Code. This was post Hays Code, when filmmakers basically able to do whatever the hell they want. It became, like, more director's medium.
Yeah.
And movies like Chinatown were able to get made.
Yeah, I don't think there could be a movie like Chinatown made today. I think the last movie sort of like that might have been, like, The Departed or something. Or Shutter Island.
But I think Chinatown is even more... I think, like, there's certain... Like, another... Like, of the movies made today that, like, actually genuinely couldn't believe that, like, it ever got made. Like, maybe The Wolf of Wall Street is the last one I can think of.
Yeah, but it's still, I guess so.
Just because a lot of stuff they do, I'm like, I forgot you could do that in a movie. You could really, it was like almost on the edge of NC-17.
Yeah, but I...
What?
I don't know. If that's...
If that's what
I don't know, we could yeah, exactly. I don't know if we could probably do another whole episode about a debate about The Wolf of Wall Street or something.
I would love to do that. I love talking about that movie, but...
Yeah.
I mean, it's just funny because was this even, like, considered pushing the envelope at the time, Chinatown? Because there were so many, like, Taxi Driver and Dog Day Afternoon. There were lots of movies like this, which is, I'm kind of jealous that I didn't get to live in a time where there were just movies coming out like this all the time. It's now on TV, I guess you could say.
Man.
TV's cool.
Yeah.
So do you have any other thoughts on Chinatown?
It was really great. If you haven't seen it, you should watch it, even though we just spoiled the entire thing
yes.
for you. So
I think it's still, even though we did spoil the whole thing of both The Apartment and Chinatown, they're both still worth watching because there's just watching the movies themselves, there's so many like little things in it, like just the music and the way the character, the dialogue and things like that, that you don't just get from a synopsis.
Yeah. It was just so good.
Yes, but I love
it. And The Apartment was really good, too.
Yes, I will always love Chinatown. I really like The Apartment. So this was our classics exchange for the week.
Yeah.
We hope that maybe you'll go watch them, and we hope we get to do this again soon. All right, we'll be right back. Welcome back to the Real Deal Podcast, everybody. We're going to wrap things up, as always, by having a little question of the week. Okay, so summer movie season is about to begin. It's May now. I guess it's already kind of begun. But I was just looking and wondering what are the best movies coming out this summer. There should be some really good ones, not all original, but there are a lot. Cassie, what summer movie are you most excited for?
Well, I have two. I'm really excited for Guardians of the Galaxy and They Came Together.
Me too. That's what...
Oh, same?
Same.
Hey, that doesn't feel good. Okay.
Okay, what do you... Guardians of the Galaxy, I would...
Sorry. Nick trying to put physical pressure on
yes.
me to move closer to the
he
microphone.
He was doing the same to me, so sometimes you hear long silences. It's Nick pushing us closer to the mic.
Yeah. It didn't feel great.
Okay, so anyway, Guardians of the Galaxy, that looks awesome.
Yeah, it looks what so good. I just think it looks so different and like different than all these like The Dark Knight, like
I'm Batman.
Yeah, exactly. It just looks so like Chris Pratt he really brings a light to whatever he does. I don't know.
I like the fact that he's like he's I'm a much
embarrassing
more.
Myself. I really like
Cassie. Cassie really likes Chris Pratt.
Yeah, I do.
Like the way I like Brie Larson, I guess. But Chris Pratt is like the kind of actor who can actually kind of do like anything. He was in Her. He was in Zero Dark Thirty. He's on Parks and Rec all the time, and he's like one of the there's a case for every character being the best character.
He's in the Lego Movie too.
He's in the Lego Movie.
And you know what? He's so like. He's such a blank canvas, just like in the Lego
exactly.
Movie.
But that's why he can do so many great roles.
Yeah.
But anyway, I think that after this movie, it's going to make him a movie star. Do you think that?
Maybe not.
I don't know.
I don't know.
I hope it's going to be as big as I think it's going to be because it really deserves to be.
Nick's really pushing me around.
Yes.
Two of the worst.
I will push him. Let's talk about Guardians. Let's keep talking about Guardians of the Galaxy. We'll just note that Bradley Cooper plays a killer raccoon in it, and Vin Diesel plays a tree.
Who is his bodyguard?
It's just such, like, a weird, like, the trailer for it. I really love the fact that, like, it told you exactly what you're gonna get, but it didn't give anything big away, so I still have no idea what it's about.
Yeah, me either.
And they played Hooked on a Feeling, which is, like, of course, awesome.
It was, like, a really juxtaposed song,
As opposed to, like, the Hans Zimmer, like, thing that they usually play in most, like, superhero movie trailers now. It looks really awesome. I'm so excited for that. But also, like you said before, They Came Together.
Yeah.
I forgot how excited I was for this until I recently was the trailer,
Came out.
The trailer and the poster are both so funny.
Oh my god, they're so
good.
Just
a little preface. If you haven't heard of it, it's starring Amy Poehler and Paul Rudd, and it's like a spin on romantic comedies.
Yeah.
And it's directed by David Wayne, who's a member of The State, as well as Stella, which was Michael Ian Black and Michael Showalter. They had a TV show on Comedy Central that got canceled after one season, and it's one of the most shows
it's very good. I can think of.
It's
on Netflix.
But they also
sometimes.
But this
Maybe
is from yeah, this is from David. David Wayne also, all of those guys, they did Wet Hot American Summer, Role Models. He's like secretly one of like my favorite comedy directors.
I love him.
And this looks, oh my god, the trailer looks so funny.
Love like Michael Showalter's like absurdist comedies.
Yes.
And I just think they're so good, and there's not a lot of comedy like that anymore. Like,
you're right.
It kind of stopped with like the Farley Brothers and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Which, didn't they work on Role Models?
The Farley? You mean like...
They might have produced
something. Oh, the Farley Brothers? Oh, they said the Farley, but the Farley Brothers.
Yeah.
Whoops. I was thinking of different Farleys, but I think they might have been a part of it, but like, that's very much a movie like done by those guys. Michael Ian Black and Showalter, I don't know if they're involved in it. They do all very different things now. Michael Showalter is a professor at NYU.
Yeah.
Actually teaches screenwriting, but they all do things occasionally. They worked on They Came Together.
Yeah. Together.
But, like, the trailer, like, a lot of the trailer is, like, very, like, broad and slapstick, but it's, like, in the best way possible.
And they came out with that clip earlier.
Which one?
In the winter. It was about how they meet and they decided to go on a date at Burns and Nerbles.
I love the part in the trailer where they're like, you love fiction? I love fiction, too. No way. Like, nobody really likes fiction.
Yeah.
That was just perfect to me. And on the poster... So, like, instead of, like, where they'd have quotes saying, like, 5 stars, we love this movie, just quotes from Deadline Hollywood saying, this movie will star Amy Poehler and Paul Rudd. Like, it sounds really weird to say a marketing campaign made me laugh, but if anything, one by David Wayne and Michael Ian Black and Michael Showalter can make me crack up.
Yeah. I'm really excited for it. If you're an avid listener to this podcast, who's probably just my mom, and you know and that mom. I really like romantic comedies. And
yes,
I think,
you do.
Yeah.
And I'm trying to get into them. I like some of them, but I will like them enough that I will see
They're
They Came Together. Yes, they are very interesting. There's some very good ones.
Yeah.
I know you're a big fan of Nora Ephron.
Yeah, my girl.
And I'm a huge fan of what They Came Together looks. Yeah. I don't know what I was going with that sense, but either way, it looks awesome. And also... I feel, is Amy Poehler been, like, hasn't really been a lead in any major movies? Like,
except for Baby Mama.
Baby Mama. She's in this one I saw called Spring Breakdown. That's what it was called. And it was with her and Parker Posey. I don't remember, someone else, I don't remember who, and it, like, didn't really do well, but I thought it was funny.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, and the idea of Amy Poehler and Paul Rudd as leads in romantic comedy. Bill Hader's in this as well.
Yeah, right? And what's her name from The Office? Oh.
This is what IMDb is usually for.
Ellie?
But Ellie Kemper!
Ellie Kemper!
Heyo!
Ellie Kemper, that's who's
Thanks,
in it.
Thanks, Nick.
Thank you to our producer, Nick. And also Jason Mantzoukas is in it, who's funny in everything he does.
Yeah, we just watched that episode of Review.
Of Review that he's in.
He makes an appearance on every show.
Do you watch
every
the league
show.
At all?
Not really.
I used to watch it, but it's worth just going on YouTube and searching The League, The Best of Raffy, because his part as this degenerate named Raffy is the best part of any given episode.
He's so funny.
But anyway, basically, this summer's all about Guardians of the Galaxy. They Came Together. Obvious Child also I'm really excited for. We've talked about before because we're big Jenny Slate fans.
Yeah.
I think it looks awesome. Yeah. But anyway, we want to know... what summer movies are you excited to see? And we hope your only answers are Guardians of the Galaxy and They Came Together. But we'll accept Godzilla and other things. I don't know if I'll accept Million Dollar Arm as an answer, but to each his own, you know? So if you want to write to us and let us know what your most anticipated summer movies are and why, just send me an email at Ian, that's I-A-N, at Real, R-E-E-L, dealblog.com. So that's Ian at realdealblog.com. And if we get some good answers and good explanations, maybe we'll put them on the show. All right, everybody. So that wraps up this episode of the Real Deal Podcast. Before we go, Cassie, is there anything you want to promote or anywhere we can find your writing?
Well, right now you can just follow me on Twitter. I'm looking for a job right now in America.
And what's your Twitter? And what's your Twitter handle?
It's at Cassie Grimaldi.
We're all looking for jobs right now.
Yeah.
But and you can follow me on Twitter at Ian0592, and as always, you can read my writing at realdealblog.com. I think you know the spelling of real because I keep saying it. So you can find my writing there. You can find us on Twitter, where we will often be competing in the midnight hashtags.
Yeah,
at midnight hashtags.
I'm way better at than him, though.
Yeah, she's really good. I'm not gonna lie, but this time I'll give you that one.
Yeah.
But anyway, thank you for listening. Next time, we'll be back with a review of The Amazing Spider-Man 2, and we will be bringing back our friend and Marvel consultant, Mike Rogers.
Professor of Comics.
Professor of Comics, Mike Rogers. Until next time, everybody, 1, 2.
He counts.
1, 2, 3, keep it real.
Oh my god.
Did we get it right that time? Did we do it?
Yes, Ian, we got it. I'm rolling my eyes a lot.
I know, you can't really see them yet.
That's fine.